J1, number 16A.
Just a while ago, we saw that harmony means the perfect relationships, the perfect agreement of ideas within a system. So we can now ask ourselves the question, what does system mean? And we come to the idea of system on our list. And we see that this term system has its written meaning from the Greek, and it means to place together, to bring together, to combine. And I'd just like to read a few definitions from a dictionary in order to build up our tone of what system means. From Webster, system, an assemblage of objects united by some form of regular interaction or interdependence, a group of diverse units so combined by nature or art as to form an integral whole and to function, operate, or move in unison and often in obedience to some form of control. Systematic means carried on in a step-by-step procedure. To systematize means to formulate into or to reduce to a system. Also in American Heritage, system is defined as a group of interacting, interrelated elements forming an integral whole. Now what we have seen is that the whole aim of science in the past has been just to focus on this concept of system. In the American Heritage Dictionary, it mentioned that the aim of science has been to just systematize knowledge. And as we know, that Funk-Wagnall's definition of system is knowledge reduced to law and embodied in a system. So what we have seen is that the aim of science has to begin to get away from isolated facts, to get away from atomistic thinking, get away from ideas that are isolated and not related to one another. So the aim of science has been to systematize these facts in other words, to place them in ordered relationship or to place them into categories. Now today, the whole aim of science is something entirely different. It's in a higher viewpoint, actually. The aim of science is on structure. Now, we say, what does the term structure mean? And from a Professor Amar, who is a professor of sociology in Paris, we have this definition of structure. He says that the sum structure means the sum total of relationships which maintains the communication between the different parts of the whole. And Webster says of structure, the interrelationship of parts as dominated by the general characteristic of the whole. So the key points in structure is this, the sum total of relationships and the whole. So we see structure is the sum total of relationships. It's the sum total of systems upon systems, where science before had been just trying to find out the system itself and to find out the order relationship within the systems. Now science says, okay, we're now going to take those systems and understand the sum total of the systems that are operating within the whole. So structured system thinking still more or less goes out from the parts and from the details. Yet what it does then is systematize knowledge. Structural thinking goes out from the whole, and it views the sum total of those multivarious systems within the whole. So we can say this, system thinking is that method of thinking which enabled us to give form to the whole, whereas structural thinking is that awareness that goes out from the whole. Now, I'd like to have you turn to your illustrative material entitled Attitude. Now, here we see two different categories. One is the structural attitude. The other is the atomistic attitude. The structural attitude is the attitude of science, or the attitude that has made that critical 3.5 step. The atomistic attitude is the attitude of metaphysics, or that attitude that has not made the critical 3.5 step. Now, Then, looking at the structural attitude. The structural attitude, the center of it, is from the sevenfold principle, from the whole. It always has the whole in view. The center, then, of an atomistic attitude is from the personal I, from the details, always having the parts in view. In the structural attitude, we see that it's principle itself, the whole, has its own solution. And that solution is that which is always in the plan of love for the purpose of the whole. Whereas, in the atomistic attitude, it's a personal I that has its own solution. And its solution is always based on personal plans, personal desires, and it's for the purpose of fulfilling our own needs, and it more or less ignores the whole. So what we see today in divine science is that we are always looking out from the standpoint of the sevenfold principle. And here we see that all the ideas, every one of us, because we are the one mind, we are inseparably united within a whole. We are working within a whole divine system, and in reality that is a harmonious system of relationships and interrelationships. It's just been through our misunderstanding that it's causing an inharmonious universe. Now, what we see then is with structural awareness is this, as I just mentioned, that it's to understand the multivarious system of references within the one being. Structuralism is a new theory of structure. And the definition of structuralism is this. And this is also a definition from Professor Amar. He says that structuralism is that method of procedure which transforms every problem into a structural problem. He says that the object under consideration and its elements are now seen as points of intersection of a multivarious system of reference. Now, an example of structuralism, just turn then to your illustrative material entitled Structuralism. Now, a practical point of structuralism is this. There are many problems, either negative problems or positive problems. But what we must see that a problem, whether negative or positive, is not a single isolated atomistic problem which suddenly springs up out of nowhere by itself. But all problems, whether negative or positive, are points of intersection between various factors that have gone to build up that problem. So in order to understand any problem, we must see it as a point of intersection between various factors. So, let's say that we have a negative problem of a bad relationship or a discordant relationship. Now, the structural approach to understanding this problem is to see it as a point of intersection between categories. So, we finally see through the structural approach that this problem of discordant relationship was a problem of fear and also a problem of lack of communication. And because where we had the one category of fear crossing the category of lack of communication, we have a discordant relationship. Now, in order to handle that problem, we handle lack of communication and we handle fear. Now, somebody who has an atomistic consciousness will think, gee, you know, I have a discordant relationship. I sure would like to handle that and fix it. Gosh, I think I'll give a gift to this person. Maybe that'll help them. Well, you see, giving a gift or giving money to the person whom we're having the discordant relationship isn't getting to the core of the problem. The core of the problem is lack of communication and fear, and therefore we must get to that core. So one always has to look at every problem then and find out just where it is as a point of intersection between various factors. Now, today, the implication of this type of thinking of structuralism and structural awareness is really quite vast, and there are many books written on structural thinking and how it applies to literature, to art, and to the sciences. But a real good book that I'd recommend just to begin with is a book by Jean Piaget, and it's called Structuralism. You spell Jean Piaget, J-E-A-N-P-I-A-G-E-T. Now, as we go on to study also the synonymous term truth, we'll take a little more, a closer look at this, the implications of a whole consciousness. So, then let's go on to the next idea which characterizes principle, and we come then to this idea of government. And just through a dictionary sense, we see that to govern means to direct or control, to regulate, to influence, to direct. Government means, again, direction, regulation, control. It means the system of policy in a state, that form of fundamental rules and principles by which a nation or state is governed. So in reasoning with our synonymous terms, we see that the idea of to govern is a characteristic of mind. Mind governs. So we say, but what is the government of mind? Well, government is a characteristic of the synonymous term principle, and we say principles government. When we come to this question of government, it always indicates the question of whom governs whom or what governs what. And in the science of the one mind, we see that it is mind which governs its idea. The ideas of mind, and as the ideas of mind, we do not govern ourselves separately. But the rule is that mind governs its idea, and it governs its idea according to the government of a one sevenfold principle. So, let's turn to our illustrative material on harmonious government. Here we see illustrated, again, as we have just seen, that law is a characteristic of mind, order, spirit, rule, soul, system, principle, method, life, form, truth, and love is plan. Now we say then that this law, order, rule, system, method, form, and plan constitute government. Mrs. Eddy says in the manual of the Mother Church of the Christian Scientists, in Article 1, Section 9, that law constitutes government. Now what we see is that law per se is a characteristic of mind. Mind is law. But what we must see is that law has a translatability, an overformation of itself. So law becomes order, law becomes rule, law becomes system, law becomes method, law becomes form, law becomes plan. Therefore, law, which is fundamental to mind, becomes order. What does this mean? It just means that law operates along order. And order is heaven's first law. Therefore, we have an ordered development of that law. Then we say law becomes rule, meaning that the rule is to use the law and its ordered development as our rule of consciousness. Then law becomes system. This means that system is based on the rules and orders which act according to definite laws. And then we say law becomes method. This shows that law operates as our life method. It shows how to apply the law in daily life. So each one of us can apply the divine system of law, order, and rule in an individual way in daily life, however we can think of it creatively. And then we can say law becomes form, meaning that we can use this divine system of law, orders, and rules in a unique way, in a unique, according to our individual method, and this brings out new form. Forms are already included within the one plan of being. So you see, you can just flow with law, order, rule, system, method, form, and plan. Law, order, and rule constitute system. You can take that whole system and use it in an individual way, in an individual method, which brings out new forms in the plan of love. Now, this is how all types of creative acts happen and all sorts of works appear. Just take music. No song is exactly the same. Why? Because it follows this sequence. You have the law, orders, and rules of music, which make up the system of music. Yet each one can apply this system of music in a new way, in their own unique method. And applying the system of music in your own unique way, according to your own method, according to this system, brings out new forms which are already in the plan of the whole realm of music. Now, then, we see that law, which evolves into order, rule, system, method, form, and plan, constitute government. And in short, we can say government is the execution of law. Now, in the human, there are various forms of government. And these various forms of government are classified according to the nature of laws by which they are based. Now, we have anarchy. And you know that the whole term anarchy comes from the Greek an, meaning without, and archos, ruler, without ruler. Now, anarchy implies no law, therefore no government. And the definition of anarchy is an absence of any form of political authority, political disorder and confusion, absence of any cohering principle as a common standard or purpose. Then there's another form of government, autocracy. And this autocracy comes from the Greek root meaning auto plus krat, meaning ruling by oneself. So in an autocracy, the law is set down by a single ruler or by a small group of people. And autocracy means government by a single person having unlimited power. Then we come to another form of government, democracy. And this again is a Greek root meaning, demos, common people, krasi, meaning power to hold, to rule. In a democracy, the law is set down by the people. And the definition of democracy is government by the people, exercised either directly or through elected representatives. Anarchy, autocracy, democracy. Then we come to another form of government, theocracy. And theocracy, again, a Greek root meaning, theo, God, krasi, power to hold or to rule. This is the highest form of government there is. This is law set down by God. Webster defines theocracy as government of a state by the immediate direction of God. Mrs. Eddy states in Miscellaneous Writings on 258, God is a law to himself and is a lawmaker and lawgiver. In Miscellany in page 108, she states, mine, the only lawgiver, omnipotent, infinite, all. And in Science and Health, on page 434, she states, spirit, which is God himself and man's only lawgiver. Thus, she implies that God is spirit and his laws are purely spiritual. And then again in Miscellaneous Writings in 206, she says that the active, all-wise, law-creating, law-disciplining, law-abiding God. What we see through here is that Mrs. Eddy is showing that law is not created by a single man. Law is not created by the majority of the people, but law is given by God himself. And besides God or the divine mind, there is no true lawmaker or lawgiver. Nowhere in Mrs. Eddy's writings do we find that man can create or enforce real laws. But she does say in Miscellany that human law is right only as it patterns the divine. Therefore, can we see today the whole attempt of mankind to create laws himself, other than the divine laws, are absolutely adding confusion to the world and is ending in chaos and in harmony. Today, more than ever, this whole system of government and question of government is coming forth. So, let's just see what divine science has to say about government, real government. We see that divine science reveals, then, that God is law to himself. God is law, God is lawmaker, God is lawgiver, God is the only law of creation, the only law governing the universe. God is the only law of being. Therefore, Mrs. Eddy is showing that God, or the sevenfold principle of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, is a universal legislator, is the sole executive power, and is the supreme ruler, ruling man and governing the universe. Now, in order for us to have a perfect government, in order for perfect government to be established, it will only happen when the laws of God are spiritually and scientifically understood and executed. Now, any government of the universe, which includes man, which is based on human material laws, cannot work. Human material laws rest on belief, blind faith, emotion, human doctrines, dogmas, and just personal opinions. And as we know, these so-called laws are just totally resulting in restrictions, slavery, and inadequate forms of government. But all of these physical, moral laws must give way to spiritual laws. And therefore we see that all forms of human government must yield to divine government. So, certain rules that we find and can pick out of science and health is this. Ms. Eddy will say that interference with God's law is inadmissible. And we can see this happening today. Human laws just are not working properly. She'll say that the greater cannot be put into the lesser. Divine laws cannot be circumscribed by material human laws. Or she'll say the greater is a rebuke to the lower. Material and human laws must be given up. They must disappear. Also, in science, she'll state that the greater controls the lesser, or the higher governs the lower. Therefore, God's law governs man, mind's law governs its idea. In no way does man govern man, and in no way does man's law govern man. So the most important question to find out are, what are the laws of God? We have to find out, what are these laws? I mean, today the world is just in chaos. We're having people are prophesying as the end of the world battles happening right now. And we have government totally seeming to collapse right before our eyes. But this is good, because the whole system of government as we know it, government by the people, for the people, etc., just the people doing the laws, giving the laws, regulating according to their own ethical commandments, their own moral sense of what is right and wrong, is going to fail. If democracy is to work, it must pattern itself after theocracy. Therefore, we must see what are the real laws of God. And government must be based on the laws of God, because government is just the execution of laws. So, it's a big, vital, important question today that the world finds out, what are these laws? The world doesn't know it. It may be touching on it, but it must find it. Now, what we begin to see is that the law of God, the laws of God themselves, are adapted to a purpose that they have to fulfill. So what we find out in science, in divine science, is that within the one being there are many laws. So we're studying a divine science, and we're studying it to find out these laws in order to help world government, really. But we find out there are many laws. Mrs. Eddy says this, from the infinite one comes one principle and its infinite idea. And with this infinitude come spiritual rules, laws, and their demonstration. Now, therefore, through divine revelation, Mrs. Eddy saw what the laws of God are, and these laws have been verified through study of the Bible. The Bible verifies these laws. And today the world is beginning in the various sciences to verify these laws. But in science, we symbolize these laws of God through our 7, 4, and 4 root notions, our 15 root notions. So we have the laws of the 7 synonymous terms. We have a law of mind, we have the law of spirit, we have the law of soul. We have the principle of law, we have the law of life, the law of truth, and the law of love. We also have the laws of the fourfold divine operation. We have the laws then of the Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. We have horizontal and vertical laws of the 4 levels of spiritual consciousness. We have the law of science itself, the law of divine science level, the law of absolute Christian science level, and the law of the Christian science level. And besides this, we have various matrix laws. All of these laws are adapted to fulfill a certain purpose and to explain a specific level of consciousness in being. See, because there are various different levels of consciousness, there must be laws which explain the relationship of phenomena within those different levels of consciousness. Now, we have the chart as a model of the one being. And as we know, this chart is found in the Four Levels of Spiritual Consciousness by Dr. Max Kapler. The chart symbolically illustrates the laws of God or the one being. Now, the science level symbolically illustrates the law of isness. The divine science level symbolically illustrates the law of self-organization. The absolute Christian science level, the law of spontaneity. And also the law of divine impulsion, the law of specification, the law of eternalization, and the law of pre-established perfection. On the Christian science level, we have the law of divine causality, or the law of creativity, the law of translation, retranslation, the law of universal reflection, and the law of structured understanding. These laws are divine laws that are inherent in being. These are not laws that are ethical commandments which have been laid down by man. And it will only be when we see that these laws are executed, and when these laws are executed, we will have true government reign on earth. As we know in the Bible, in Genesis, the first day of creation symbolizes true government of principle, and also the 4,000-year period of Bible history, especially with the prophets, symbolizes the absolute government of principle. So, we see then there is an absolute government of principle. This brings us to our idea of absolute as an idea which characterizes principle. And just looking at a dictionary definition of absolute, we see it means not dependent on anything else, not determined by or affected by anything outside itself, fundamental. That's from Webster. Then Annandale gives this definition of absolute. Freed from limitation or condition, unconditional, unlimited by extraneous power or control, complete in itself. So, the laws of God are absolute. The government of God is absolute. In our symbols, we can say the laws of the divine mind are absolute. The government of the one divine sevenfold principle is absolute. This government is complete in itself. It is not determined by anything else. It is not dependent on anything else. It is not affected by anything else. And it is not influenced by anything else. It's immutable. It means that all our human opinions and laws cannot influence it. And it doesn't need any help by us to demonstrate this government. This government just is. All we have to do is to understand those laws in being, have our structure of consciousness become one with those laws, and those laws demonstrate themselves. They are complete in themselves, and they'll demonstrate themselves. And they're totally free from the world of beliefs, dogmas, doctrines, isms, ologies, etc. So, these laws, then, are complete in themselves, and they are fundamental facts inherent in being. This means that they are fixed and always the same. Also, we see that the government of this one divine sevenfold principle is what we call apodictical, meaning that it's incontestable, it's unquestionable. It is imperative, meaning that it's mandatory. Therefore, because it's imperative, it demands absolute our reliance on it. It cannot be deceived, we cannot avoid it, and we cannot evade it. Eventually, world government must go to the laws of God. It just can't be evaded. This is why we say, gosh, you know, it'd be nice to go back maybe to the good old times when, you know, everything seemed to go nice in the 1950s. You know, I can remember under the Eisenhower age, how everything seemed to be happening nice. And I was reading on an airplane just recently, when I was on a flight in an airplane, about the period of the 1950s to the 1955s, where they call it the Eisenhower era. And I think they said only 17% of the public were reading. Everybody was just so happy, and they all had lots of money, and they're all out at barbecues, you know, just really enjoying themselves. This was just the very thinking that human government was just wonderful and fine and everything, you know. Well, what happened? The 50s are gone. And on came the 60s. Student revolutions, revolts, everybody yelling and screaming. Now, here comes the 70s. Look at our government. I mean, it's just looking like it's absolutely just collapsing before our eyes. But it has to happen. We can't have the nice Eisenhower government, so to speak, at all. It's imperative that it must be dismissed. It must disappear. We cannot have good human government. We can only have theocracy. And as I mentioned, if we know that democracy, when we see that everybody is equal, and that one man does, the majority doesn't rule. That means that a certain majority doesn't rule the minority. Is it right that a majority really rules a minority? Not really. In being, we're all equal. Therefore, if it's ruled by the people in a democracy, then the people must be ruled by God. And when they're ruled by principle God, then they can be, more or less you could say, it's ruled by the people, because their structure of consciousness is that one with the structure of reality. But democracy must pattern theocracy. So, theocracy is on its way in, and that's the signs of the times. One needn't be disillusioned and feel unhappy that it looks like the end of the world battles and that our government's falling down. It's all for the best, because that whole system of government now is being replaced, and what's coming in will be theocracy. Much higher and much better form of government.